We're here in Las Vegas
at the National Accordion Convention, and we have with us today the legendary jazz accordionist Art Van Dam. Art, we want to welcome you to, officially welcome you to the Arizona Accordion Club website.
Well, thank you, Bob. Nice to see you here. And, of course, I'm familiar with the Arizona Accordion Club. And so, are you enjoying yourself here?
Well, totally. And I hope you are familiar with us because you're an honorary member of our club.
That's right. That's right. And I'm very glad to have to be a member. And, of course, I lived down there for about 10 years.
Yes, you did. You're an official member of the Valley of the Sun.
Thank you.
Let's get right down to business.
Okay. Everybody here at the convention has been asking me, what's the state of your golf game?
Very mediocre. Of course, I'm talking to you with your two handicaps, and then you have the nerve to give me your scorecard where you just shot 69.
All right, we'll change subject here real quick. I want you to tell us now, how does it feel to be 85 and celebrating your birthday with that young buck, Dick Contino, 75, who incidentally says you can't play golf worth a lick?
Oh, well, I haven't run into trouble with Dick because his problem is in playing, he plays too many blue notes. And this is a problem that we have. No, so he probably figures my game is as bad as my accordion playing.
I doubt that he does. It really has been fun to watch the two of you interact for the last couple of days.
He's a very, very good friend. Of course, we've been friends for many, many years. When I, years ago, we've been in the 50s. I was working at NBC in Chicago, and I had a TV show. And lo and behold, a guest that came on the show was Dick Contino. And I think that's the first time that I basically met him, and we've been very, very good friends ever since.
Well, it's quite obvious from the mutual respect that both of you share for each other. I must begin this interview here now seriously. We were talking the other day about Myron Florin, and once Myron was not too well, and so you were called to replace him on a Lawrence Welk show. Can you take the story from there?
Well, that's the truth. You know, I did. I was a guest, and before that happened, I used to play golf occasionally with Lawrence. And we were friends, and so on this particular situation, we were out golfing and had set up a time for me to do the show. And a funny thing happened on that because that talking to him, so he said, Lawrence said, well, as we're golfing, well, would you like to play with the big band? And I said, no, I didn't, not really. I said, I'll just use the bass and drum would be fine. He said, well, it's okay, whatever you want to do. He said, well, no, what might you play in that? And I said, well, I don't know, some standard and so forth. And I mentioned two or three tunes, and I came up with the tune selection calling All the Things You Are, and immediately he says, play that. I found out a while later, I know why he wanted me to play it. He owns it. It's a true story.
And you played it last night, too, at the concert.
Yeah, well, it's become sort of a standby for me. It comes, it's one of my favorite tunes, and I usually close the set with the quintet doing. It's a musician's, what we call a musician's tune. Great chord changes. It's one of the few tunes that all musicians, you don't have to change any chords or say, well, this is a better chord than that. It falls very, very well, especially for improvising.
Let's go back in time a few years. I
know our listeners are going to want to know. You were born in Norway, Michigan, and that's right between the roaring cities of Vulcan and Quinnesec on the Upper Peninsula. How did the accordion come into your life?
Well, the accordion came into my life evidently when I was 1929, when I was 9 years old. Evidently, my parents played a Victrola thing where they had the round disc that I can remember. And I think there was an accordion record. It could have been Frosini or Petruderro, I don't know. But for some reason or other, my folks decided that it would be nice if I would play an instrument. And I was very fortunate because a gentleman by the name of Pines Caviani, who had been performing on the orphan circuit, had decided he had enough traveling and so forth, and he came back to his hometown, which is Iron Mountain, Michigan, which is about 9 miles from Norway, and decided that he was going to start teaching. Well, fortunately, I had him as a teacher for 5 years. He became almost like a second father to me, and I was fortunate because he was a very good teacher, and he knew being on the Orphan Circuit and performing, he knew what business was all about. So I was very fortunate.
So then from Upper Michigan, somehow you got down into Chicago where you were raised. And what about Chicago? Now, that's where Andy Rizzo came from and Frank Morocco and Al Monty and Art Van Dam. What is it about Chicago and accordionists?
Well, at the time when we moved in 1934 to Chicago, my teacher was still give me less, but every 2 weeks or something. That was 300-mile drive. Then he turned around. He couldn't do it anymore. Then he turned me over to Andy Rizzo. Andy Rizzo was strictly a classical accordionist, which was very good. Thank goodness for him. I studied with him for 5 years. We didn't use accordion music. We used a piano manuscript. And I did that for about 5 years. And he was just a great teacher, and you're talking about different accordionists that studied with him. He was just the best, and I'm very glad that I did study with him because he really taught you how to play the instrument.
So then you became a teenager. Well, you were a teenager then, and then you started a trio, and then as a 21-year-old, you were hired by Ben Burney and a group called All the Lads, and you toured with Burney and his big band. Now, what did he add to your learning experience with the accordion?
Well, getting the gig first with Ben Burney is sort of humorous. I had a trio and I was playing at the bowling alley up on the north side of Chicago. And Ben Burney was in town doing a show for the CBS, for the Wrigley Chewing Gum. And he was featuring a guitarist by the name of Les Paul. At that time, this gentleman was not Les Paul. He was known as Rhubarb Red.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Les Paul's name was Rhubarb Red?
That's right. He was known as Rhubarb Red. And Les used to come in and hear my trio. He liked what I was doing, and he even would sit in occasionally at the bowling alley. Ben Burney decided while he was doing the radio show that he wanted to do a theater tour. He liked to tour and do a theater. So he decided to put an orchestra together and go on a tour in the Midwest. And CBS offered Les a job to stay there. So Les decided, well, he'd rather stay at CBS and work on radio. And Ben Burney said, well, he used to feature him in front of the band. So he said, well, I got to get somebody to feature. So Les said, well, come on over and listen to this accordion player. And this is how that happened. And working at this bowling alley, and all of a sudden Ben Burney walks in with a cigar. The place went up for grabs.
I heard he was a chain-smoking cigar guy.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. And fortunately, he hired me. And it happened to be that it was went on the tour 10 days after I got married in 1941. And went on the tour. And the guitar player and the bass player played in the band. And then they would bring me out during the show. We had singers and different acts. And then I would be featured in front of the band with Ben Burney.
Okay, then a couple of years later, I think it's 1944, you became a studio musician with NBC Radio. And is it fair to say that that's where you developed your distinctive Van Damme quintet sound?
Yeah, I started with the quintet, and then a while back I started with the trio, I mean, and just with guitar and bass.
And you didn't have drums?
I didn't have drums. Okay. And I was working a club in the 40s on the south side, and the owner said, you can hire another musician, make it a quartet. And Chuck Calzaretta was an accordion player and vibe player, and I hired him. So we started with two accordions, and then he would switch over to vibes. But the two accordions didn't last too long. I liked the sound of the vibes. So from that on time, anything that I did, even with trio, I eliminated the guitar or something of that sort and used the vibes.
To make sure you got the vibes.
Right. And that was the trio that I had. And then we, in the 40s, we got offered a very, very good job in the hotel down at the Sherman Hotel. And the gentleman that hired us as a trio with the vibes and guitar, vibes, myself, and bass, he said, well, you should add drums. So actually, we started with the quartet still not having, I eliminated guitar. Then when I got to NBC in 44, I was there about a month, and I asked them if I could add guitar to the ensemble. And that's where the quintet actually started in the latter part of 44.
Okay, and while you were at NBC, That was when you developed the song, that beautiful ballad, Ecstasy, your theme song for years. Tell our listening audience today, what was the inspiration for you to come up with Ecstasy?
Well, I wanted to write a pretty ballad, because we're known for playing a lot of the jazz things and a lot of standards. And I wrote a few things, and most of the things that I wrote were stuff like Moving and different things of that sort, which were instrumental type things. And I just thought, fooling around, and I thought, well, I'll decide to, I'd like to have a ballad and possibly use the nice ballad as a theme song. So I worked out and I wrote this. And to make it sound, actually, it's a little bit different timbre as far. I decided rather than put it in the, I put it in the key of D. And all the accordion players, you know, why did you put it in D? But for some reason, when I played it on the instrument, it sounded better in the key of D. And I did use it as a theme song, but that's where it basically started.
And Al Monte has transcribed it to the key of C, and that's what we prefer to play it in today, Larry.
You prefer to play in C? That's okay. I may have trouble playing it in D now. You never know.
Not D flat, though.
No.
Well, let's go back to Benny Goodman. You did some experimenting with his swing recordings, adapting Goodman's solos to the accordion. You were both classically trained. You were both creative jazz soloists. If Benny Goodman were alive today, what would you say to him?
Well, I would say that he was my idol.
What would you say to him, though?
What would I say to him? I'm still trying to play the accordion the way he played clarinet, is what I would say to him. We became friends, fortunately, when they had the Benny Goodman story, the movie came out. The movie came out at the Chicago Theater as starting. And he came into town, but I did know him anyway. And there were, he had a very fine accordionist that worked with him at times that he did some recording, Ernie Felice, which is a good friend of mine. But he came in, and Steve Allen did the movie. And we were doing an hour TV show, a network show, a music show. And they came over, and Steve Allen was the host for one day on the show, and then Benny came over, and we played Memories of You and a few other things like that. So I did do a couple things with him. But when I was in the 30s, when I was 36, 37, 30 years old and studying classical accordion, my original accordion teacher had told me, as much as he liked what I was doing, he said, if you were going to make a living playing the instrument, you better learn how to play commercial. He didn't say jazz or that, but he had to play. But my liking, at that time when I was going to school, in high school, I was listening to big bands. I listened to the big bands like Goodman and Woody Herman and stuff. And then Goodman brought out the things with the sextet, with the vibraphone and things like that. And I thought, well, why can't I play an accordion like Benny Goodman plays clarinets? There was no accordion people to teach you or to even to listen to. So I just, and I organized a little trio myself when I was in school. The first trio was myself, a sax player, and a drummer. The drummer turned out to be a fabulous drummer called Mousie Alexander, who went to New York. But you can imagine this trio, and we played some gigs, accordion, sax, and drums.
And you wrote the arrangement?
Yeah, I've got it. But I used to listen to the sax player because he improvised very good, and I would try to copy some of the stuff that he did. So I've always had that feeling that I wanted to improvise or play like a horn does or something like that. And you've got to remember, we're talking about 37, 38 around that time. You couldn't hear anything accordion-wise. I mean, nothing of that sort.
Now, with all this success that was starting to evolve in your lifetime, you made 37 trips to Europe and Australia. Any interesting accordion stories in particular? Any hiccups during all those travels?
Well, I was very fortunate. In 1966, I got a letter. I was still with Columbia Records, and I got a letter from a gentleman in Germany who had a recording company, and he was an accordion player and piano player, and he had a lot of money, and he wanted to want to know if he could record me. I got permission from Columbia because the sales of his company would be strictly in Europe. So they said, okay. The company was called Saba at the beginning and then MPS. So I was the first artist to start recording for him. And the first album I did, which we did in San Francisco, he came with the producer. We did the album there. And he liked what we did. And then he said, from now on, I want you to come to Germany. I want you to do two albums a year. I said, fine. But yeah, you're going to come to Germany. Well, when I started in 67 to go to Europe and start recording, I was surprised that people knew me, and so they put me on a radio show besides recording and so forth. So I started recording, and then they found out I was doing that. So I ended up touring a lot, and they had accordion clubs there. I think strongest areas is the Scandinavian countries. Sweden and Finland and Norway are very, very strong. They got a lot of accordion clubs.
And you were hiring local musicians wherever you were?
I would, too. And when I started recording, I brought Freddie Rundquist with me. They couldn't find a guitar player, but I ended up getting some very, very good musicians that I worked with, that I recorded with. So I ended up doing 16 albums for this company alone. Then I did, altogether, I think I did 23 or 24 albums in Europe while I was touring.
Okay, we're going to move from the albums, we're going to move from radio, we're going to go to the big word, television. Live television, The Tonight Show, The Dinosaur Show, huge cameras, the quiet please signs and all that kind of stuff. What comes to mind when I say live television to you?
What comes to mind? I started on radio in 44, and 49 when television came in, I did what The Quintet, one of the first TV shows in Chicago on NBC. And all of that was live. I mean, and so I ended up doing things from then on with people like Garraway, Hugh Downs, and other names. And so I did, my work then was radio and television. When I left NBC in 1960, then I could see the writing on the wall that everything was changing as far as music was concerned on radio or television. And so then I went into business for a while, trying to become a businessman. Musicians don't make good businessmen.
I'm not way business.
Well, I'm not great for selling things. I mean, that's not my bag. But anyway, I had that for about 5 years, but the popularity, I ended up in Vegas working the Desert Inn with my quintet in the 60s. And then doing different things and starting to travel with Europe and all that, I ended up doing the Tonight Show a few times and the Today Show. Garraway started the Today Show, so when we were back east, we would appear on the Today Show. And so I did guest shots.
And along the way, though, you met some really fine people like Ella Fitzgerald and Dizzy Gillespie and Peggy Lee, Buddy DeFranco, Harry James, Joe Stafford, Shrimp Boats?
Well, what happened on that, some of it is through recording, and some of it while I was even at NBC, we had radio shows. Garraway was a jazz buff. Any guest that came that was working in the Chicago area, he would come, they would have him on the show. So Ella would come on the show, Dizzy Gillespie would come on the show. We were the quintet was the music. We played with them. We backed up these people. And so I got.
Can you share a story though about one of those people?
Well, share a story. Columbia Records. They decided that I should do an album with Joe Stafford. She came to Chicago while I was doing it for Stafford and the Quintet. She came with her husband Paul Weston. An average recording session, an album, we're not talking with tape, we're talking about an album putting on acetate. The average thing union-wise is that you an album is done in 3 days. You have a 3 hour session, you do three or four tunes, one, three, four. You end up with 10 or 12 tunes in 3 days. And this is how it's usually done. And most of the time, and there's no taping, I mean you have to do whatever it is. She came in and she was so delighted with what we were doing. We ended up doing 8 tunes in 1 day, did a double session in 1 day. So we finished the album in 2 days. The album was done.
unheard of in terms of live.
Yeah, no overtime either. We did it in time. I mean, that was it. But she's a great performer. You talk about people. She was wonderful, Gail, to work with. But, and worked in playing him back at Ella, of course, one of my biggest kicks, and turned out to be a real good friend of mine. We did some jazz festivals in Europe together, Dizzy Gillespie. For an accordionist to have friends of that type in the business, that to me is one of the highlights of my career. That's, in other words, they don't treat me as an accordion player. They treat me as a friend and hopefully as a musician. And that's the highlight of my career, playing the instrument. I do play it different than the average accordionist, and they claim that I'm the guy that started it, and Tommy Gamina and Frank Morocco all blame me for starting it. So they would not have continued, and they blame me for it.
Now tell the truth on this next question. Do you practice at all?
No, I don't. I played and practiced 3-4 hours a day probably when I was a kid. I was married for over 50 years, and my wife could verify that. If she were alive, she could verify the fact that I don't think I ever played 5 hours in 50 years that we were married. But I was working. But I did all my practicing when I was a youngster, and going into, I was still playing classical accordion when I was 19 years old. And I had a group, I had a trio working nightclubs or taverns in the Chicago area. So I would do that, and then I'd go to Andy Rizzo. The fact is, it was in May 1939, I have a program, somebody gave me the program, I was 19 years old. The last thing I did, I played Semiramide Overture with an orchestra. It took me 6 months to memorize the thing. When I got through doing it, playing the thing, I walked up to Andy and I said, well, thanks a lot, Andy, goodbye. And I was serious that I was at a trio going at the time. He said, no, you can't do that. He ended up writing a tune for me that I played on NBC called Fugitive from Cherney. Andy wrote that tune and dedicated it to me.
What's the biggest tip you've ever gotten on a job?
I think a buck. Nobody gave me. I never had any tips. I mean, when I was a kid and played in the taverns, I used to play in taverns when I was 50. Right. When I had the all the years, I don't remember buck. I don't remember the trio. We never got a tip.
It just wasn't done.
It wasn't done, or they had us behind the bar, or they, you know, No, I never got a tip. Gee, you know, that sort of makes me mad.
Well, it's really going to make you mad now when you find out I was playing with a guitar player once, and we got a $100 tip for playing Old Shep from a farmer whose dog had just died.
Well, I don't know the tune, so I've never been able to make it.
Okay, just a couple more questions because we're getting ready to go down to your celebratory luncheon, your birthday party today.
Yeah, it's a little late.
How did you ever get talked into going to Russia this fall or this December? What did Stas Vengleski say to you? Were you in a weak mode or something?
Oh, no, it's very simple.
You've never been there, though.
No, I could have gone a lot of times, but they never wanted to pay me. This time they're paying me. I'm being very honest.
Oh, you're too much. One more question. You know, I really have to thank you when you were in Phoenix a couple of years ago for the concert, coming out of retirement to do your homecoming concert.
Yeah, right.
In Phoenix. You gave me two great tips. I asked you for a couple of ideas how I could improve my playing. And one of them was, you said, always keep your fingers near the keyboard because there's less chance for error and you can play faster. And I've really concentrated on trying to perfect that. Right. In the past couple of years. The other tip you gave me was try to use the bassoon reed as much as possible. Why?
Well, first of all, I've never liked an accordion sound with two reeds together. I don't like the sound. If you get a vibrato, I want a flat sound like a horn playing a clarinet. The only way you get that is you take the bassoon reed, the lower reed, and you have a dry tune. In other words, no vibrato. So okay. That it's just straight.
Okay.
I found that this blended well especially when I start working with vibraphone and have a guitar, and it blends. So everybody thinks, oh, what reed did you use there? 99% of the time I use the bassoon reed and that's it. I may have a clarinet reed in the chamber. And I use it on certain things like Caravan or something like that as far as sound is concerned. But when you're talking about the instrument, if I were going to teach somebody or a youngster how to play, the first thing that, the main thing about the accordion, forget the right hand, forget the left hand, the most important part of the accordion is the bellows. The bellows, not to play loud or soft. You should think of every note that you play that you use the bellows one way or another. If you play, my idea, and the reason why I say keep the hands close to the keyboard, you play everything legato. In other words, play legato, and then if you want to accent, you don't hit the note, you use the bellows. I mean, that, to make the instrument, well, at least for my idea of it, even Rizzo was, he wanted me to cup my hands and, you know, to sort of curl my hands. I don't want to curl my hands. I mean, you know, so I do play that, but I keep my hands close to the keyboard. I try to play everything as legato as possible. And if I want to attack something, not with my hand, I attack with the bellows.
Well, there you go, accordionists worldwide. Your $200 lesson today from Art Van Dam, the master. Art, it's really been a pleasure sitting here talking with you today and getting to know you personally the last couple of years. And we're going to have a lot more fun in the future, not only with the accordion, but on the golf course, too.
Yeah, well, you got to teach me a few lessons on the golf course. I mean, not doing too well right now.
Well, we're gonna work on that. That's for
right,
sure.
Okay, fine. Nice talking to you, Bob, and say hello back in Phoenix to all my friends.
I will definitely. Thank you very much.